все играет. Играет, играет, уже пять нот за тысяч протяжнила.
Some music from The Gambler by Prokofiev, coming up from the Met this afternoon. Prokofiev based the piece on a novella by Dostoevsky, and he wrote it when he was very, very young and full of beans, and it's had a very fraught history, as operas go. So to unravel some of the story, I've turned to Dr. Alexander Tumanov. Russian-born, he's an authority on Russian culture and history, music most especially, taught for a time at the University of Toronto and the University of Alberta, and is now retired to London, Ontario, and has very kindly agreed to come into our studio there this afternoon. How do you do, sir?
I'm perfectly fine.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much for making the time. Before we talk about Prokofiev, let's talk a little bit about you. In what year did you come to Canada?
It was 1974.
What were the circumstances?
The circumstances were at the same time usual and dramatic.
Yes.
It was a partially regulated emigration.
Mm-hmm.
The reason was very political reasons. My wife, Alla, in her youth, was arrested, detained, and tried by the Soviet KGB organs, and spent some time in the Gulag.
What year would that have been?
It was in 1951-56.
So Stalinist to begin.
Stalinist to begin and fade out.
Yeah.
We were afraid, I was particularly afraid, that it can happen again. So it better was to be out of that place.
Yes.
And when the opportunity came, we used it immediately.
How was it that the opportunity came?
We are Jewish, and at that time it was very big push from the American side to the Soviet Union to let some people go.
Mm-hmm.
And they chose three groups of people to leave the Soviet Union: some Jews, some Armenians, and some Volksdeutsche, Germans from the Volga River.
Right.
So we were among one of those groups, and it was meant an immigration only to Israel, nowhere else. But on the way to Israel, we changed our itinerary and ended up in Canada.
Did you actually reside in Israel for a time, or
no? From Moscow, we flew to Vienna. In Vienna, we declared that we want to go to Canada. We were forwarded to Italy, which gave us temporary passports, and from Italy, the immigration was proceeded to Canada. We had in Italy 4 beautiful months, which we call Roman holidays.
I laugh, and you make it sound like light fare in a way, but obviously this is a kind of huge shuddering moment in a life for your...
It was. But what was ahead was much better than what we left.
Why did you choose Canada particularly?
Oh, that is a funny story. Back in the Soviet Union, one time I was a musical journalist, a freelance journalist, and I worked for the journal Soviet Music to cover the foreign artists coming to the Soviet Union. And among others, there were Canadians, outstanding Canadians, Glenn Gould, Maureen Forrester, Lois Marshall.
Of course, yeah.
And especially, I got quite closely to Lois Marshall. We had a very interesting interview on the topic, How I Work. And kind of befriended each other. So I had an impression that Canada was the top of the musical world. And when the opportunity became available, I said, Canada, there was another reason for having the seasons, which I hate now, I mean winter.
Well, this is why God gave us airlines, so that you can go during the winter to have another Roman holiday.
That's right.
Did you continue to know Lois Marshall well when you came to Canada?
I met her several times in Toronto, but then we left Toronto for Edmonton, Alberta, and I've heard her after that already in a range of mezzo-soprano, and she remains my most beloved singer.
Well, understandably, she was a wonderful, wonderful artist. You know, I remember vividly, in the way that people can recall where they were when they heard that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was shot or John Lennon was shot. I remember vividly where I was and what I was doing when I heard that Lois Marshall had died. I was driving in the middle of Saskatchewan between Regina and Moose Jaw, and this news came on the radio, and I stopped the car on the side of the highway and just thought about her for a while. I'd met her once or twice and had done some work with her, and she was a wonderful, wonderful person.
Absolutely wonderful person, and of course, outstanding artist. And I'm only sorry that nowadays her singing is very rarely is heard on CBC Radio 2.
We'll fix that up now. Here's Lois Marshall with Greta Krause and some Schubert. Feierabend in the evening. Two great Canadian musicians, Greta Krause and Lois Marshall, performing that music by Schubert from Die Schöne Müllerin. Lois Marshall was a friend of Alexander Tumanov, who is in our London studio today, speaking to the opera which is coming up from the Met. It's The Gambler by Prokofiev.
He was a prolific opera composer. He wrote 8 operas, including very early ones at the time of his childhood, which were never performed. He was an early bloomer, and by the time of entering the St. Petersburg Conservatory, he was 13 years of age.
Yes.
By then, he already written 2 operas. At 18, he completed his composition studies. And one of the first pieces of his work was the opera Gambler. I mean, the mature Prokofiev's works.
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to talk about the history of the opera, I would have to turn to 1915, when Prokofiev undertook his first trip to Europe. It was a present from his parents on the occasion of his finishing the conservatory.
Where'd he go?
He went to London.
Oh, nice.
Quite unexpectedly. And in London, there was a fateful meeting. He met 2 very important people of Russian music, Diaghilev and Stravinsky.
Oh, yes.
And both Stravinsky and Diaghilev declared that opera as a genre has been finished, dead, that it was a swamp without future.
That's optimistic.
Thought otherwise. He came back to Russia with a firm decision to prove otherwise. And he chose the most unromantic plot as possible, that of Dostoevsky's The Gambler. In his impudent and challenging interviews given to the St. Petersburg reporters, he ridiculed all possible forms of opera and traditions, from the versification of the text in librettos, presence of the choir, at the expense of dialogues, and the division of action by numbers. His theories he embodied in the work on The Gambler.
He wanted to, in a way, work in the same sort of style as had been employed earlier on by Mussorgsky, is that right?
That's right.
A kind of singspiel, almost.
That's right. It was called a dialogue opera. It started in Russian music by Alexander Dargomyshsky and then continued by Mussorgsky. But there was a significant difference between the two, because Dargomyshsky's text was based on Pushkin, and thus this text was versified, and this was not attractive to Prokofiev. He wanted to set up the opera on prosaic text, the same way as Mussorgsky did with the Boris Godunov.
So there be no ditties?
No ditties, no separate arias, no dividing numbers, and only the streaming dialogue which propelled the musical, dramatical development in the opera.
So was this quite revolutionary then in the moment?
It was, and it got a very, very interesting following outside Russia, because the operas written in Europe by different composers followed the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
The examples are Pelléas and Mélisande by Debussy, Wozzeck by Alban Berg, and Inside Russia, The Nose by Shostakovich.
It seems to me that this was a time in Russian history, and you'll appreciate that I'm not deeply steeped in all the information, but this is a place that seems pretty ripe for things that are revolutionary.
Well, yes and no.
It's always so complicated.
it's very complicated. I mean, in artistic terms, of course, it was a revolutionary idea. In terms of political terms, I'm not sure, and I will tell you how things developed with the opera. The opera was commissioned by the Mariinsky Opera House and was scheduled to be performed in 1916-17 season.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very close to very serious.